Welcome to the Thriving Birth Worker Podcast, a space for conversations about how you, the birth worker, can create not only a fulfilling and sustainable career, but a joyful and thriving life. I'm Erin Underwood, an educator, movement specialist, mother of four boys, and a total anatomy nerd. My passion is to see birth workers encouraged, supported, and empowered in their careers and life.
Hello, hello. How are we all doing? I'll be honest, I have been feeling pretty emotionally drained lately. On one hand, it's spring and I've planted a garden, which I love. We're getting more sun in the Pacific Northwest and I'm able to walk outside, which is my love language. And spring just feels new and clean and it's just such a lovely experience. And then on the other hand, there's this worldwide pandemic going on where everything just feels wrong and bad. And I have so many of my loved ones going through legitimately hard and heavy and painful things. And they're doing this in a hard and heavy, painful time. So I just leave my days feeling emotionally exhausted most of the time. I've been able to move out of the heaviness and feel more joy working on the online side of my business. That's been an emotional shift for me as well because I just love my in-person classes. I love connecting with my clients face-to-face. I love knowing about their kids' plays and school projects and what they did last weekend and how their work is going. And I'm sure a lot of you are experiencing something very similar as far as having to shift to more online forms of connection. But I am learning to love to serve my larger community via the internet. So one of the offerings I'm re-offering is my Strong and Functional Pelvic Floor and Core 4-week series. So I explain the specifics of that class at the end of this episode, and I wanted to let you know that I'm also offering a 4-week series geared towards supporting the nervous and the immune systems. So these are two 20-minute classes that you get every week. I pull out all my tools I have to help downregulate the nervous system, use embodied movement to help support the nervous system, and as we support the nervous system, that can help us process any anxiety or stress that's coming up in our lives, and also to move in a relaxing and refreshing way that keeps in mind what's going on with the lymphatic system. I bring all these things together and I think about them all without you having to put a lot of thought into it. So it's a 4-week class with an understanding that movement is a powerful tool, but often, especially now when you're exhausted and carrying a lot of tension in your body, you don't want to move. So I'd love to have you join me. The links are going to be in today's episode show notes. So speaking of exhaustion and tension, one of the ways emotional exhaustion and tension can come up in our bodies is through the pelvic floor. The pelvis is central to who we are and it tells a story so very well. Often trauma and tension and pain reveal itself there. Have you or any of your clients noticed that you've had any pelvic floor symptoms creep up over the last few weeks? I've heard quite a few of my clients tell me about their pelvic floor symptoms either getting worse or coming back. And so I thought this episode would be quite timely. I wanted to chat with you about the pelvic floor, its functions, and the ever always diagnosed Kegel. So first off, let me say this. This is my perspective based off of my extensive training and experience that works really well with my clients and myself. And you might notice that my perspective is a little bit different from some of the other guests that I've had on the podcast. Now, I intentionally interview guests that don't always 100% agree with me because I think it's really important to have a variety of opinions to discuss and to hash out. And really, I think most of my guests, if we sat down and really laid out what we're saying and why we're saying it, most of us would be saying the same thing in different ways. So let's get to it. Kegels. We've all heard of them. We have all heard that we should do them. But what exactly are they and why are they prescribed as a cure-all for everything connected to the pelvic floor? So first, let's discuss what we mean when we say Kegel, because definitions really, really matter. So a Kegel, how a lot of my clients have told me it has been described to them, is they've been told that they should go to the bathroom, start to relieve themselves, urinate, and to stop the flow of urine. Now, they are told when you stop the flow of urine, feel the muscles that contract. They are told then those are the muscles you want to contract
so you could practice your Kegel by contracting those muscles over and over and over again. Some people even go as far as to tell my clients, practice this Kegel on the toilet. Do it while you're urinating. Stop the flow of urine, start, stop, start, stop, start. Now, I will make a very definitive statement here and say that is not helpful to the neurological function between your pelvic floor, your bladder, and your brain. You do not want to stop your flow of urine and start, stop, and start. That is not helpful to your bladder. It is not healthy. And that is something that I never tell my clients to do. I even go as far as to say, please stop doing that. So there's that. So that is how one side of the fence will define a Kegel. It's really interesting when you think about how even the male anatomy and female anatomy are obviously somewhat different down there. We all have pelvic floors. We can all engage our pelvic floors. But when a female, someone with female anatomy stops the flow of urine, they're using really superficial muscles to stop the flow of urine. And someone with male anatomy actually uses some deeper pelvic floor muscles to stop the flow of urine. So even there, the definition starts to have a breakdown. Wait, what muscles am I supposed to be using? How are you cueing it? So even there, we can get a little bit gray, a little bit muddied. Now, when we're understanding muscle tension, and when we're understanding strength, and when we're understanding function, definitions matter. So when we think of the pelvis and the female, or it's a lot of times Kegels are given to females' anatomy, people with female anatomy, because we're talked about like, oh, you've had a baby, or oh, you're getting older, so you need a Kegel. And I don't know if I've heard any of my male clients been told by their doctors to Kegel, but maybe some of them have. But in general, I think a lot of them are my female clients. And so we have this idea that strength equals tension. So if you zoom out and you listen to a lot of the words and the dialogue that centers around the pelvic floor, you hear words like loose and tight. So a lot of women are, they don't want a loose vagina. They want to tighten their vagina. Or they, and then you can kind of see that mind connection, how neurologically we're programmed now to think of tight, a tight pelvic floor is a strong pelvic floor. And we're going to talk a little bit about how muscles work and why that is not the safest assumption to make. So some of us have heard of the term hyper and hypotonic tension. So hypertonic tension is when a muscle is carrying a lot of tension and has a really hard time releasing that tension, going into an elongated state. Hypotonic means a muscle is in its elongated state and it has a hard time exerting enough tension or force to go into its contracted state. And so if a muscle is not in balance, it can be one or the other. And it happens in the pelvic floor, it happens other places in the body. So contraction and extension are both healthy functions of a really well-balanced muscle. So if you think of your arm and you think of a bicep curl, and or like someone who's flexing their arm muscle, if that arm can't straighten, then even though it might look really strong because it can carry that tension that forms the shape of, you know, the muscle is now tense and strong, quote unquote, you can see like flexor muscle. You see all that strength there, quote unquote. But if that arm can't reach and lift and extend, is it really a strong arm? So even if the hand is clenched, like super, super tight, but if that hand cannot unclench, we know that that's not a functional hand. That hand or that arm, if it is carrying a lot of tension in a clenched, in a contracted state, then, and it cannot go into its full length, if it cannot extend, we can understand that that's not a functional arm. So we know if you're a mom or you're doing any kind of a job and you can't extend your arm or your hand, you're going to struggle to do daily life things.
Now, somehow we've taken the pelvic floor and we've separated from the rest of the body, and we think that different rules apply to those muscles. We think we want to just keep engaging. It doesn't know how to engage. It doesn't know how to carry tension. And so we can just carry all that tension. And there can be a lot of fear around the core and the pelvic floor. A lot of, if it's not functioning well, it really triggers a lot of us psychologically in a way that's very different than if we broke our arm or if we rolled our ankle. Yes, if we break our arm or we roll our ankle, those are big life-altering events, even if it's just for a shorter period of time, because we have to change how we move throughout our day. We have to accommodate that. But I think we have a narrative around the core and pelvic floor that somehow those muscles get especially broken and have an especially hard time healing. And broken and betrayed are words I hear a lot out of my clients when it comes to the core and pelvic floor. If the arm or the ankle or a leg, those body parts a lot of times seem to draw a very different reaction from my clients. Like, they want to rehab. They want to know how to strengthen. Those are the type of phrases that I hear around those body parts. But when it comes to the core and pelvic floor, there's this really deep, almost feeling of betrayal from your body. Like, my body is no longer doing what it needs to do. But I think there's a level of hopelessness that is attached to how a lot of times we talk about the core and pelvic floor. So I am a huge proponent of, one, just taking the mystery out of the core and pelvic floor and not acting like those muscles are especially different than any other muscle. Yes, it can take work to rehab. Yes, some of us need surgery. I'm not anti-surgery. I am not anti-rehab, but I am anti-acting like certain muscles are inherently completely different than the other muscles in our bodies. Because if you look at the musculature, they're the same. And we can't separate the body. So the pelvic floor isn't separate from the core, isn't separate from our back, it isn't separate from our legs. Like, all these muscles are connected to and run, they're so connected and we're so one unit that we can't all of a sudden say the pelvic floor is like an island separate from every other part of our body. It just doesn't work. So we are looking at this idea of tension and extension and hyper and hypotonic tension. Understanding loose and tight are not necessarily effective words when we're talking about a functional pelvic floor. And there's this other mindset too of, when we come to engaging the pelvic floor and the core, we tend to think of it as an on-off switch. Either we're engaged, everything is tense and tight and like 100% as loaded as possible, or we're not really doing anything. So if you think of, if you go to open a door, the brain is very effective at making a judgment call, a split second call that you don't consciously make, of how much force and how much load is appropriate for what you're about to do. So some of us have had this happen where you go to open a door and it's either a lot lighter or a lot heavier than we were expecting. So we go to open a door that's a lot lighter than we were expecting, and it'll like bang open because we pushed it way too hard and it startles us. Or we're walking along and, you know, our brain makes that judgment call of how heavy a door is, and maybe it's a lot heavier than we were expecting. We go to push the door open and it doesn't move, or we like bang our head into it because we're just zipping along. And in both those situations, it's a little bit embarrassing. We look around, we want to see if anyone's looking, and then we pretend it didn't happen. That stands out to us because it happens so rarely. There are so many decisions we make in a day about how much load to use and how much load is appropriate that we don't have to cognitively even make that decision. Our nervous system and our brain and our eyes and everything in our world is working in tandem with us, that our body makes that decision instinctually. It's very powerful because it does stand out when we kind of miscalculate and we make a wrong decision and we over or under calculate. Most of the time, we're really accurate in knowing. And I think that's super cool about the body. If we slow down and think about it, the body is so, so, so smart. It's really powerful. Now, we know that load is different for different situations. You wouldn't pick up a pencil the same way you would pick up a really heavy bag of groceries. You would really, your brain would know how much load is needed for each activity. And you don't have to think about it. You don't think, okay, arm, I'm about to pick up a pencil. Deep breath. Okay, engage. Okay, pick it up. The body's very reflexive. And even when you're in a hurry, if you are operating at a place of pain or you're injured, usually we will use a lot more intention when it comes to lifting something heavy, and that's great. But if we are strong and in a hurry, we can just grab that bag of groceries and we know how much load it's going to take to get that up off of the ground. Our brain can kind of make that calculation and we can pick it up with as amount of force that is necessary. So we can actually do that with the pelvic floor and core. We can train our pelvic floor and core to respond more reflexively, more instinctually to the load that is being given to us. So if we are leaning over, that is still a load on the core. But if I'm just leaning over a couple inches to pick something up, that's going to be a different load than if I'm twisting in the car to reach something in the back seat. It's going to be different than picking up a child. It's going to be different than being on hands and knees. All these scenarios are a different load for the core and pelvic floor. And we have really a lot of times neurologically disconnected from those areas of the body, the pelvic floor and core, where I have seen a lot of my clients either I'm about to engage my core, so I'm just going to be on. I'm going to just tighten everything so that I can counteract whatever force or whatever pressure is going to come at me. And I don't know how heavy or how intensive that load it's going to be. And so I'm just braced myself and I am prepared for whatever comes at me. Or they have a hard time even getting those muscles to engage at all. And so really understanding that it's not necessarily an on-off switch isn't what we're looking for in an optimized pelvic floor and core, really, because they work in tandem. We want to be able to train the pelvic floor and the core to be able to respond in a way that is appropriate to the load that is at hand and know that those muscles aren't just on-off. So Kegel, tight, tense, brace yourself for whatever's going to come at you. And then you can relax. It's more, if it's a gentle giggle, that's going to be a really interesting, but not a super heavy load on the pelvic floor. That's going to be different than when I sneeze. That's going to be different than when I jump. That's going to be different than when I run. And I can train my pelvic floor to be able to respond a lot more optimally, but it's going to be unique to each situation, just like my twisting, just like my lifting. And that training takes some time and some intention, but it doesn't mean that it's an on-off switch. So that delineation, in my opinion, really matters because it's not just tense or relaxed. There's a real amazing variability that the core and the pelvic floor are capable of when we slow down to retrain ourselves on how to do that. So I also really don't teach. We can't demonize intentional activation. So I'm not sitting here saying that intentionally activating the core or the pelvic floor is something we shouldn't have to do. Absolutely. Like, rehab is so important. If you break your arm and you don't use your arm for a couple months, you're going to be rehabbing that and doing really simple things initially to get it to engage and getting it to build strength. And so I just don't use the word Kegel, but I'm not saying I don't train with intentional activation of body parts, including the core and the pelvic floor, because I absolutely do. And I don't believe we can throw that out, as far as a really healthy tool that we can use to retrain our muscles, how to fire optimally and with mindfulness and connected to that idea of controlling inner abdominal pressure. It's really powerful. So I do think that neurologically, we have a lot of us have lost that connection to the pelvic floor and the core. And so slowly practicing our engagement down there is a really effective tool. So I wanted to talk you through one way that I like to cue practicing the pelvic floor and core engagement. So I do in some of my more intensive trainings will practice engaging the pelvic floor in a more isolated way, but I don't usually train it in my exercise classes because I don't think clenching the pelvic floor in isolation is the most helpful way to train. So what I like to do is I like to tell my clients to feel their ASIS bones, so those sticky outy hip bones. If you were to put your hands on your hips and then trace your fingers forward and you'd find those little kind of hip knobs on the front of your hips, and then you trace your hands along the inside of your leg, your hip crease really, and come down in between your legs, you'd feel your pubic bone in between there. Some of us have a little extra padding and we can dig for them. I promise you they're there. And if you were to draw lines between those three points, you'd get a triangle between your pubic bone, your ASIS, and you have that arrow pointing down really in your really low abdominals. Now, first, we're going to start by tapping that area in the triangle, tap, 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 just all in that whole triangle. So we're waking up neurologically. We're building a connection initially between our brain and our lower abdominals. And they're all connected, but sometimes the brain forgets where certain things are at. If we don't talk to that area very often, the brain can just get a little lazy as far as talking to certain areas neurologically. All right, so we tap, 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 or a little bit of a scratch, real gentle. We're just kind of talking. Now I want you to find your belly button and your pubic bone, and about halfway in between, I want you to imagine there's a quarter just sitting gently on top of your belly. And there's a quarter halfway between your pubic bone and your belly button, right there. And now we're going to do an inhale. And on the exhale, I want you to the air out. And I want you to imagine as you slowly the air out all the way to the end to the end, this is going to take a minute here. You're going to gently draw that quarter up and in, about just an inch up and just an inch in. So this isn't a huge forceful thing. As you the air to the end, to the end, to the end, to the end, you're gradually feeling the pressure, the force of your belly activation increasing, 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 almost like a corseting. And rather than forcing the pressure down and out like a crunch, we're feeling that pressure gently drawing up and in. Now, I want you to try just a few more. I call these core breaths, where you can either, you can, like you're blowing a dandelion, the little seeds off of a dandelion. Imagine you're going to blow all of those off. Or you can imagine you're fogging up a window. So your mouth is in a wide circle and you're going to fog up a window, but slowly with control. So I want you to try all three, and then you do those exhales relatively slowly so that you can do it to the end, to the end, to the end, to the end, and feeling the lower abdominals engage and gently pull up and in. The engagement increases, increases, increases at the end, and then we release. Now I call those core breaths, and that's how I train when we do our work that's engaging the core. And we practice feeling how much engagement is really necessary for the move. And so we're training. And it's interesting because a lot of people are curious why I'm not training to initiate from the pelvic floor. But when we really train those lower abdominals, everything is connected in the pelvic floor. So the pelvis has about 45 muscles that attach within and to the pelvis. So if you think of all your leg muscles, the backs of your legs, their side hip muscles, the glutes, your back, your belly, everything in the core, like everything. I really love cueing from the pelvis because the pelvis is so central. And so we have so much going on in the pelvis. And we love to, again, isolate the pelvis like it's an island. We like to isolate the pelvic floor like it's a special little island. And really, when we are engaging the core, the pelvic floor, it cannot help but be engaged somewhat. So when we are drawing those lower abdominals in and up, the pelvic floor is responding. but it's a different response than this massive on-off switch. The pelvic floor doesn't just tighten really intensely, like squeeze, 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 while we're doing this intentional core exhale. And so some people, because their minds have trained themselves to believe that pelvic floor engagement is an incredibly heavy, tight squeeze, that I'm not working my pelvic floor with this core exhale because it doesn't feel really intense. And so that's where this delineation of understanding that it isn't an on-off switch, but you're going to feel more load in the core and pelvic floor if you're doing a plank than if you're doing a gentle side bend, than if you're just sitting and breathing, just like picking up a pencil versus picking up a grocery bag. And those loads are very appropriate. So it is not inappropriate to not feel everything massively engaged and feel like it's a really heavy load when you're doing a gentle side bend. That's incredibly appropriate. But most of us have been trained to believe that the pelvic floor and the core need to fire at 100% if they're actually doing their job. So that delineation, I think, helps people just take a breath and relax and realize it's okay if I don't feel everything 100%. It doesn't mean I'm not doing it right. It actually is a really good sign. So here's where it all kind of boils down to. Stabilization matters. The ability to stabilize the spine, the rib cage, understanding the breath takes a lot of strength. And so I do train in my classes tons of stabilization rather than always focusing on exercises. It's how we do the exercise is really, really important. I think it's really important in our vocabulary, in our dialogue, as we talk, we don't separate the pelvic floor and the core as an island, that they're not some special kind of muscle that are specially broken or especially healed or need to be especially trained. There is some speciality to it in the sense that we have neurologically disconnected from those areas. And so I do feel like it's very important to train those areas. It is also, they are special in the way that they are very connected to the psoas and the pelvis and the belly. And that's very central. It's where we carry some tension. It's where we can carry trauma. It's where we can carry emotion. And so, yes, the pelvic floor and the core are special as in those ways, but they're not special in the way that they are especially fragile or especially easily to be wounded or broken or dysfunctional with a hopeless slant on it. And so I am very passionate about talking about the pelvic floor and the core in a way that is extremely hopeful and empowering, because women deserve to, even if you're in the middle of rehabbing, to know that there is so much hope. And that you will be able to sort through this in a way where trying different tools, trying different rehab, trying even if you need to do surgery, like it's all going to be okay because you're going to sort it out and your body's not especially broken. I can't make promises. I can't say everyone's going to get healed or no one's going to be, everyone can be asymptomatic. And there are cases where we just feel really, really stuck. But there are so many amazing tools that we can try and that can provide at least some level of relief and can counteract that pain and can get us to a place where our symptoms aren't controlling our lives. So contraction in and of itself, the idea of activation is not evil. I am not anti-Kegel in the way of activating the pelvic floor isn't good because you could be hypertonic. And so adding tension to tension might not be wise, which that statement is true. So if you know, or if your client knows that they have pelvic floor issues that they're really struggling with, a pelvic floor physical therapist or occupational therapist can provide them with gold for information about their body. Knowing whether you're hyper or hypotonic is your starting point to even knowing how to move forward with your rehab. And so because if you are hypertonic, meaning those muscles are in that contracted state and have a very hard time going into the full length, the extended state, then that is going to be really interesting if you're in that contracted state and then you add Kegels to that. So you're already contracted, you already have this tension, and then you're adding more tension on top of that and hoping to resolve the issue, it can be really discouraging. So if your clients or you are working with this idea of pelvic floor and engagement, and you're feeling really stuck, you're not seeing a lot of forward movement on adding that engagement, then I would really recommend seeing someone who is qualified to do that internal exam. And go back and listen to my interview with Lindsay Vestal, who is an occupational therapist, because she will put your mind at ease as far as what to expect with an encounter and an appointment with an occupational therapist or a physical therapist, because it can be really, I think, emotionally draining to even, you know, pick up that phone or make that phone call or make that appointment and walk into that office, because there is so much emotion attached to this area of the body. But please listen to Lindsay's interview, and that will just put all of your just concerns at ease. I mean, she's amazing. So if you're local to Lindsay, please go to Lindsay. But she also has a lot of resources as well. Also, so just like contraction is an evil, relaxation is so impactful. So we understand that a strong and functional muscle can both contract and relax. But when it comes to the pelvic floor and core, we get so scared of relaxation, because especially if there's this feeling of falling out, we feel like if we let go of those muscles, we will fall out. So I have been there. I've had pelvic organ prolapse. And so I felt like I was sitting on a tennis ball. I felt like I had a tampon that was falling out of me. Like, I felt that feeling of really desiring to clench a lot to just maintain feeling like everything is going to be held in. And so the idea of me being able to relax, one, is emotionally challenging. And so for a lot of my clients, this is where they're the most resistant. They will do exercises all day long. But if I say, okay, let's practice relaxing, this is where there's almost a look of terror sometimes of, you want me to do what? And so what I really love to cue is laying on our backs on a bed even, so we're really comfortable. I'm practicing relaxing the pelvic floor and the core, because there it feels more secure. So when you were sitting up or we're standing up, there's that pressure, the pull of gravity kind of pulling on the pelvic floor already. And so there's that extra feeling of falling out in that position. So I really like to ask my clients to just rest on their backs and practice the relaxation, letting those muscles go into the extended state. So giving them a break, but also letting them build that strength in an elongated state rather than just in a contracted state. So that's really powerful as well. So questions, I think questions are really powerful. Asking the right questions can be really enlightening. So, you know, what I always like to think about is just, can you control your pressure systems? Can you activate only the amount of force that's really necessary for the load that is required, or is it more all or nothing? Do your core and pelvic core work in tandem, or do they feel really isolated and separated from each other? So the focus, in my opinion, shouldn't necessarily be on the ability to contract a specific set of muscles, but to create a cohesive unit in the body that works in tandem and harmony with control and intention. So if you want to call that a Kegel with a core breath, that's not going to offend me. It's not going to bother me. But really, I tend personally to avoid the use of the word Kegel, because so many people have so many assumptions that I am not saying. And so I train my clients using what I just described to you as a core breath, really in the exercise class situation, explaining the holistic approach with the core stability and interabdominal pressure regulation. And then we have fun with the rest, knowing that the pelvic floor isn't separated from the core or the other parts of our body, and it's getting trained in a really powerful way as we move through the class. So we practice relaxing the belly and the pelvic floor in a controlled way, just as much as we focus on the activation and the engagement, because we know that both elements have to be able to be engaged in a strong and functional muscle. So I don't like to say that any move or any exercise is bad. I don't like to say the Kegel is bad. I don't like to say the sit-up is bad. I don't like to say the plank is bad. You can do a daily move like picking up something heavy in a really unoptimized way with your core and feel negative effects in your pelvic floor. So you can do something really simple and all of a sudden feel like crap, like now my pelvic floor did not like that. Or you can do a sit-up with incredibly great strategy and do absolutely no harm to your core. So it's backing up and getting your strategy intentional and mindful is incredibly powerful. So if you or your clients are interested in reprogramming your core and pelvic floor in a deeper way, a resource I have is I'd love to ask you to join me for my 4-week strong and functional pelvic floor and core class series. So we dig into all the nitty-gritty of learning engagement and controlling abdominal pressure and how breath matters and how we can optimize the whole system. What questions do you have about the Kegel and the pelvic floor engagement and strengthening? So go ahead and email me and I can answer you in an upcoming podcast. As always, you can find anything mentioned in today's podcast under today's show notes on thethrivingbirthworker.com. So thanks for joining me in this talk about the Kegel. I have a few upcoming episodes that's going to be sprinkled in. We're going to dive into more understanding the sit-up. I had an amazing midwife talk to me about how she said, I know I tell my clients that they shouldn't do sit-ups. She said, I have no idea why I say that. I just know it's not ideal or it's not optimal. So I'm going to break down the sit-up. Why do we say that the sit-ups aren't necessarily the best, especially if we have a diastasis recti? So if I'm saying no movement is bad, but then we have these other recommendations, why are they there? And then how do we know and own that information? It's so powerful when we know the why behind a recommendation and when our clients can ask us and we're right there ready to even give a cursory explanation and then send them on their way to a resource that they can dig a little bit deeper in is incredibly powerful rather than just a shrug. And I don't know, I was just told that. So go ahead. If you have any other things that you want me to dive into as well, you can email me those questions and I would be happy to answer them on the podcast in an upcoming episode. So thank you so much for joining me today. If you're enjoying the podcast, if you would please just take a moment to rate, review, and subscribe, I would be so thrilled if you did. I hope you have a wonderful week. I'm cheering you on as we navigate this thing called life together. Bye for now.
The information and discussion provided on this podcast are not intended and should not be construed as medical advice. If you have a medical concern, you should consult with an appropriately licensed physician or healthcare provider.